the first Italians in Ford County arrived not in a broken ox cart, but rather by first-class passage on the Illinois Central Rail Line. A welcoming party unloaded their brand new luggage and helped them into two 1904 Ford Model Ts. The Rossettis were treated like royalty as they followed Mr. Desjarnet from party to party in Clanton. The town was instantly abuzz with descriptions of how beautiful the bride was. There was talk of a formal wedding ceremony to sort of buttress the quickie service in Memphis, but since there was no Catholic church in Clanton, the idea was scrapped. The bride and groom had yet to address the sticky issue of religious preference. At that time, if Nicola had asked Mr. Desjarnet to convert to Hinduism, he would have quickly done so. They finally made it to the main house at the edge of town. When the Rossettis turned into the long front drive and glimpsed the stately antebellum mansion built by the first Mr. Desjarnet, they all broke into tears. It was decided that they would live there until an overseer's house could be renovated and made suitable. Nicola assumed her duties as the lady of the manor and tried her best to get pregnant. Her younger sisters were provided with private tutors and within weeks were speaking good English. Mr. Rossetti spent each day with his son-in-law, who was only 3 years his junior, and learned how to run the plantation. And Mrs. Rossetti went to the kitchen, where she met Callie's mother, India. "My grandmother cooked for the Desjarnets, so did my mother," Miss Callie was saying. "I thought I would, too, but it didn't work out that way." "Did Zach and Nicola have children?" I asked. I was on my third or fourth glass of tea. It was hot and the ice had melted. Miss Callie had been talking for 2 hours, and she had forgotten about the jury summons and the murder trial.
"No. It was very sad because they wanted children so badly. When I was born in 1911, Nicola practically took me away from my mother. She insisted I have an Italian name. She kept me in the big house with her. My mother didn't mind. She had plenty of other children. Plus, she was in the house all day long."
"What did your father do?" I asked.
"Worked on the farm. It was a good place to work and to live. We were very lucky because the Desjarnets took care of us. They were good, fair people. Always. It wasn't that way for a lot of Negro folk. Back then, your life was controlled by the white man who owned your house. If he was mean and abusive, then your life was miserable. The Desjarnets were wonderful people. My father, grandfather, and great-grandfather worked their land, and they were never mistreated."
"And Nicola?" She smiled for the first time in an hour.
"God blessed me. I had two mothers. She dressed me in clothes she bought in Memphis. When I was a toddler, she taught me to speak Italian while I was learning English. She taught me to read when I was 3 years old."
"You still speak Italian?"
"No. It was a long time ago. She loved to tell me stories of being a little girl in Italy, and she promised me that one day she would take me there to see the canals in Venice and the Vatican in Rome and the tower in Pisa. She loved to sing, and she taught me about the opera."
"Was she educated?"
"Her mother had some education. Mr. Rossetti did not, and she had made sure Nicola and her sisters could read and write. She promised me I would go to college somewhere up north, or maybe even in Europe where folks were more tolerant. The notion of a black woman going to college in the 1920s was downright crazy."
The story was running in many directions. I wanted to record some of it, but I had not brought a notepad. The image of a young black girl living in an antebellum home, speaking Italian and listening to the opera in Mississippi 50 years earlier had to be unique. "Did you work in the house?" I asked.
"Oh, yes, when I got older. I was a housekeeper, but I never had to work as hard as the others. Nicola wanted me close by. At least an hour every day, we would sit in her parlor and practice speaking. She was determined to lose her Italian accent, and she was just as determined that I would have perfect diction. There was a retired school teacher from town, a Miss Tucker, an old maid. I'll never forget her. And Nicola would send a car for her every morning. Over hot tea, we would read a lesson, and Miss Tucker would correct even the slightest mispronunciation. We studied grammar. We memorized vocabulary. Nicola drilled herself until she spoke perfect English.
What happened to college? She was suddenly exhausted, and story time was over.
Oh, Mr. Trainer, it was very sad. Mr. Desjarnets lost everything back in the 1920s. He had invested heavily in railroads and ships and stocks and such stuff, and went broke almost overnight. He shot himself, but that's another story.
What happened to Nicola?
She managed to hold on to the big house until the Second War. Then she moved back to Memphis with Mr. and Mrs. Rossetti. We swapped letters every week for years. I still have them. She died 4 years ago at the age of 76. I cried for a month. I still cry when I think of her. How I loved that woman.
Her words trailed off, and I knew from experience that she was ready for a nap. Late that night, I buried myself in the Times archives. On September 12, 1930, there was a front-page story about the suicide of Zachary Desjarnets. Despondent over the collapse of his business, he had left a new will and a farewell note for his wife, Nicola. Then, to make things easier for everyone, he had driven to the funeral home in Clanton. He walked in the rear door with a double-barreled shotgun, found the embalming room, took a seat, took off a shoe, put the gun in his mouth, and pulled the trigger with a big toe.